Hello. Coming today on Breaking Free, a modern divorce podcast.
Is some of it tied to having a borderline personality disorder or something like that? I mean,
narcissism. You know,
yeah. I mean, maybe they can't change it, or maybe they're unaware of how to. Is that
right? So great question.
Welcome to Breaking Free, a modern divorce podcast with Rebecca Zung and Susan Guthrie.
This is the place to hear other people's stories, to learn from the top experts in every related field, and to also have some fun, laugh, and hang with two girlfriends who are also top family law litigators.
And now we invite you to listen to today's show.
It's going to inspire you to transform and break free.
Hello, and welcome to today's podcast. Our topic today is dealing with high conflict personalities in divorce and beyond. I'm Susan Guthrie.
And I'm Rebecca Zung. And today we are so happy to have an amazing guest for you, author and one of the top experts on high conflict personalities, Megan Hunter. Megan is the CEO and co-founder of the High Conflict Institute with Bill Eddy, LCSW Esquire, who developed the high conflict personality theory. She is also the founder and publisher at Unhooked Media, a media company focused on complicated relationships. Megan trains legal, mental health, business leadership groups, universities, and other professionals across the United States, Canada, South Africa, and Australia in the area of complicated relationships and high conflict legal and business disputes. She is also the author of Bait and Switch, Saving Your Relationship when Incredible Romance Turns into Exhausting Chaos, and the co-author of the 2017 title, Dating Radar, Why Your Brain Says Yes to the One Who Will Make Your Life Hell. Welcome, Megan.
Thank you. I'm very pleased and honored to be with you today.
Thank you, Megan. We really are happy to have you here. The topic of high conflict personalities and high conflict divorce is something, you know, in preparing for today's podcast, Rebecca and I were talking about some of our memorable cases where we had high conflict personalities. And I think that word really sums it up. They are memorable. They happen more often, I think, than people understand or know. These are the real War of the Roses type things or beyond. But, you know, for our listeners who don't know the term or aren't familiar with this concept, can you just give a basic understanding of even what a high conflict personality is?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I think it's become more and more known, mostly in the last 10 to 15 years in the family court community, family law community, and a lot of people in the court systems that are experiencing divorce and co-parenting disputes, custody disputes, are becoming more familiar with it. But what's it really mean? What is a high conflict case? Is it somebody that's just behaving badly? Well, a lot of us behave badly when we're going through a divorce, right? We're not at our best, and we are, you know, we're probably not saying the nicest things or thinking the nicest things about our soon-to-be ex-partner. But there's a real distinct definition for someone with sort of has this high conflict personality. And it isn't like you can just look at someone and know. These aren't folks that come to you with a sign that says, I'm going to be really, really difficult. I'm going to be in court over and over and over again, and I'm going to make life pretty miserable for everyone involved, including the kids. So what is it? How do we identify them? It's really about a pattern of behavior that we see in these cases. So right off the bat, it might be after a divorce filing, there might be a request for supervised visitation or parenting time or access, whatever the terminology in your jurisdiction is. So, or a domestic violence filing, or a filing for an order of protection. Something that restricts the other parent's access to the children or to you, or just something like that, is a red flag that, this might go south. Because what we see with those cases is this pattern of behavior of all or nothing thinking, seeing themselves as the victim, always. Blaming, that's really the key indicator, is when you see someone who has a target of blame. It's your fault, it's her fault, it's his fault, it's the lawyer's fault, it's the judge's fault, it's the teacher's fault. So that's, if you hear that over and over and over again, it's a red flag to be concerned that you need to proceed with caution. So this is the high conflict pattern of behavior. And they really need to come to the court to have their disputes resolved, because they have sort of weak problem-solving skills. It's not that they can't solve problems, but their problem-solving skills are, they're not used to using them in relationships. They kind of have more difficulty in relationships than other people. So when they come into the court system, they just come in with what I call a complicated operating system. It's different, you know, there's two types of people that are going to come to the courts for a family matter. Someone who can eventually resolve their dispute, probably through mediation or even amongst themselves, or with a collaborative divorce team or some outside assistance. And then there are maybe 10 to 15% of the cases that come to court, and they're the ones that are going to litigate cases, and they're going to be back in court. We call them frequent filers, always looking for professionals to solve their problems, but then they don't always take the advice, and they, you know,
just they often don't, right?
Right, yeah. Exactly. So that's the kind of the long answer to your question.
So just to clarify, when you say, you know, they're the ones that come in and file for supervised time sharing or domestic violence injunctions, you mean like, in sort of an unfounded way, you know, there's no actual danger to the children or to themselves. They may be contriving it, or maybe taking a string of truth and turning it into, is that what you mean? Or,
well, yes. And, you know, there are legitimate, valid reasons to file these, regardless of whether it's a legitimate reason or one that's not. It's an indicator that there's going to be a problem in this case, because most families don't have problems to that level where there's domestic violence. Now, in some cases, you know, there will be an incident during a separation. People are going to act more intense and out of character for their normal behavior and, you know, dispute resolution patterns. So during any kind of breakup, there might be that domestic violence allegation or a child abuse allegation. A lot of times those are resolved or dropped, or, you know, and those folks get through the system sort of on their own. But the other folks don't. And so either way, you need to look at it and say, okay, this is a case that could potentially be high conflict. And we need to do something different. Keep an eye on it. And, you know, best case scenario, I think in the profession, we kind of understand, and there's science that supports early intervention in these cases. Instead of getting into the adversarial court system, where while our courts are necessary, it can really cement an already kind of difficult family and dysfunctional family, kind of turn them into more of a high conflict family in the court system because it is so adversarial.
So we recognize that all relationships have struggles, and certainly people who are ready to go to divorce court are not getting along and they've been fighting and something's, you know, I mean, I guess there's the instances where they're just stopped loving each other and they all happily proceed, but most of the time there's already been conflict. So what differentiates a normal level of struggle or conflict from what we define as a high conflict personality?
I guess a normal level, you know, you would take advice from the advice givers. I'll give you an example. I worked for about 8 years at the Arizona Supreme Court Administrative Offices of the Courts. And in that job, I had oversight of the mandatory parent education courses here in Arizona, and I guess the whole program. So in Arizona, if you file a divorce matter or any, you know, even if the parents aren't married, but it's kind of a separation, something to do with children, you're required to take mandatory parent education course, 2 to 4 hours, something like that. So I would evaluate the results for all of the entire statewide parent education program, every parent that went through it. And what we found was about 80%, it fell about 80% every year, would gain some insight from that course, right? Oh, I shouldn't call my ex B word or whatever in front of the kids. I shouldn't do this in front of the kids. I shouldn't let that. And they get some insight and they change their behavior. 15 to 20% of the evaluations would come back saying, what a waste of time. I didn't learn a thing from the class. The teacher was stupid, boring. You know, you didn't help me at all. You guys, it's all your fault. Just all of this stuff. There was no insight. And that kind of matches up with the cases that we see, the percent of cases we see going through the courts through intense litigation that goes on a long, long time. And that's really the difference, is the people who have the ability to change, even if they're in some pretty intense conflict, with a little education and some good professionals kind of supporting them in a positive way along the process, they will have less of a need for court intervention, and probably less damage to their children in the long, short and long run. Whereas the other folks, there's just not that change in behavior. They don't get those insights.
Is some of it tied to having a borderline personality disorder or something like that? I mean, maybe they can't change it, or maybe they're unaware of how to. Is that
right? So great question. And really the work we do at High Conflict Institute with Bill Eddy, he's a licensed clinical social worker. And what he saw after he became a lawyer, he went into family law. And before long, he started to see these cases where the behaviors are all these things I'm talking about, just kind of this, all this conflict that constantly goes on, and a lot of drama, and emailing back and forth, texting back and forth, just all caps and swearing, and it's all the stuff that family lawyers are used to seeing in these cases. And he recognized that the people he'd worked with in as a social worker in clinical settings and psychiatric hospitals had people with personality disorders. He was seeing those types of behaviors and patterns of behavior in these high conflict family cases he was starting to work with. And he started to put the pieces together and realized that there's a subset of people with personality disorders. Whether they're diagnosed or not diagnosed, it's really about a pattern of behavior. And it's not everyone with a borderline personality disorder. And I don't call them borderlines. I don't call them narcissists. I say somebody with this disorder, because they're a person with a disorder. So it's just a subsection of them. And the way you kind of identify them is, again, that target of blame. It's just this constant, it's everyone else's fault. And they're in repeated conflicts in relationships all over the place. And they may be doing fine at work. They may be the head of the company, the head of the law firm, the head of the church, hold high positions, or they may be really struggling in relationships and families and just being barely able to keep their head above water. So yeah, there's a strong background of a subset of personality disorders. And, it's kind of tough because our court systems aren't set up to deal with that. They haven't had this understanding that that's what this 15-ish percent of the population may be dealing with. So it's like we're trying to treat an illness, or we're trying to treat everyone the same way, with kind of a one-size-fits-all approach. And we can't do that. With high conflict personalities, we need to do something different for them. They're complicated. They have a different way of relating to people. They have a different need for connecting with the professionals who work with them. We need to change our language as professionals in how we work with them in order to get them successfully through the system from point A to point B and help them gain some skills and insights so they don't harm their children.
You mentioned that you know, the, some of the behaviors and the things that high conflict personalities do when they're in the divorce process. And certainly that's what Rebecca and I mainly see, right? We see the people. I've had the lady who threw herself out of the moving car. We've had the people who stalk their soon to be ex-spouse, some really extreme behaviors. And I know as a professional, I often think, how the heck did my client ever get in a relationship with this person? How do HCP, it seems so obvious that they have problems, but we're seeing it at the end. How do people get into relationships with high conflict personalities?
Great question. Because it does seem like, you know, why would you, you know, if you see these patterns of behavior, but people aren't looking for that in the beginning. What we did a survey. It's still going actually on the Dating Radar website. That's the book Bill and I wrote together last year, Dating Radar. What we found is that people are falling in love very quickly and moving in together or becoming financially entangled quickly or marrying quickly. So, or even, you know, going to bed together very, very quickly. And it's creating this bond too soon. With someone with borderline personality disorder, they kind of feel empty and they need to connect and attach to kind of feel okay about themselves. And they don't know that about themselves most generally. And so they're connecting with a partner and kind of putting their best selves forward, not intentionally. It's just all kind of subconscious. There's often a real spark in these relationships that in our survey we asked and people said, yeah, that was a big part of it. There was a bigger spark than I'd had with anyone else. And this person that I met was compatible with my lifestyle. If I liked dogs, he liked dogs. If I liked to ride horses, she liked to ride horses. If I liked the Denver Broncos, you know, she liked the Denver. She was a huge fan, you know. So it's all this compatibility and just a deep passion, a really intense spark, and it gets them really hooked in, and then it moves very quickly. And once they're in, it's really difficult. So that's kind of the, I guess to finish that up with that personality style, they, once they're in, then it's like the other person can never do enough to really fully satisfy the deep need within that other person. And so eventually that really upsets the person that may have BPD, borderline personality, and it just creates a lot of chaos and drama in the relationship, and people don't know how to deal with it. You know, they don't know what to do, and it becomes very chaotic, and the, you know, jumping out of the car and stuff, that a lot of impulse control problems. The good news with borderline personality is there's a lot of evidence that they of all the personality disorders can get insight into their problems and seek treatment. And there's tons of evidence showing that the right treatments do work. So dialectical behavior therapy, schema therapy, some cognitive things like that. The other disorders like narcissism, antisocial, histrionic, and paranoid, there's not a lot of good evidence of treatment out there. So how do people get into relationships with them? With someone with narcissistic personality disorder, they're looking for someone to admire them. So someone who kind of needs to be connected may connect with someone who needs to be admired. And once they're in, you fall in love, you ignore the red flags. That's what we really see, is just a lot of ignoring the red flags. And once people do see problems, they're willing to, they just really want to help the person, or they want to fix it. Or, as they said in our survey, it's too late to get out. We were already engaged. The wedding was already paid for, you know, just all these things. And they're in before it's too late by the time, you know, they really wake up. And the big problem, I mean, we're adults when we make these decisions. However, the implications, you know, are difficult for the children, really difficult.
Yeah. long lasting.
You know, as I'm listening to you, it struck me, I recently was having a conversation with my best friend who happens to be a physician, and she told me something that I never realized before, and I was wondering if maybe you could elaborate on it a little bit as well, and that is that the borderline personality disorder, the definition of that is not the borderline between normal and not normal, which is what I assumed it was, and I think a lot of other people do too. She said it's the borderline between neurosis and psychosis. And if you could just maybe explain to our listeners a little bit more about what borderline personality disorder is, and then maybe how we could help these people, or how the spouse can help these people and or change them in some way.
Okay, yeah, great question, because there is a lot of misinformation about borderline personality disorder. I just gave a talk at the Association of Family and Conciliation Courts conference in Washington, D.C. last month with Dr. Jeff Riggenbaugh, who's treated over 5,000 patients with borderline personality. The feedback we got at that conference, there was over probably about 120 family law professionals in the room. And there was this desperation for information because they just don't know. And there's this, belief in society that any, a borderline is the scary, crazy person, psychotic, who jumps out of cars, Well, somebody who has, 90, this is something new Bill came up with recently. If 90% of people wouldn't do that action, there's probably a problem. Now, but we have to remember, not everyone with borderline personality disorder has a high conflict personality, or is that complicated, or has that target of blame. There's different varieties, but borderline in and of itself is, by definition, back in the 40s, psychiatrists weren't able to help this select group of people, and they saw that, the treatments they had for psychosis and, what was the other word,
Neurosis.
Those treatments weren't helping them on either end. So they were just kind of this group in the middle that they didn't know what to do. They're on the borderline of both. So that's where the term borderline came from. Well, now we know it as a treatable disorder. The pattern of behavior for someone with BPD is there's a kind of a chronic feeling of emptiness, and they have a hard time feeling included, feeling welcome. Well, one of the key indicators is a difficult time in regulating emotion. So it's really a brain disorder. And the way I describe it to people is to help them kind of get some understanding is, and maybe some empathy, because I'd really like people to start turning around how they think about people with borderline personality. They're not bad people. They're not nuts, not psycho. I hate that terminology, and I discourage people from ever using it. Because you wouldn't use that with someone who's, let's say, is diagnosed with autism, another brain disorder, right? So we need to do things that can help them. What are the treatments that help? Number one, don't tell someone you think they have borderline personality disorder, because
not helpful.
Not helpful at all. You're right. And to recommend maybe some counseling, counseling for people that struggle with relationships or with impulse behavior or regulating emotions. And if they can get into some kind of treatment like that, and we're seeing that a lot of people have insight. I mean, I can quote the numbers off the top of my head, but people by the tens of thousands are getting treated for this all over the world. And back to your original question about, kind of what is borderline. There's a genetic component to it. There's also a trauma, typically an attachment in those early infant years, and then a lot of times a trauma component. So childhood trauma, like sexual abuse, not that it's going to happen with everyone who has sexual abuse, but let's say you already have the genetic predisposition for components of the pieces of BPD. That's like the gun, and then trauma and maybe lack of attachment are the trigger for it. And so there's a lot we could do if we had early intervention way back, at the very beginning. If we understood that somebody might have this in their genetics, then we would intervene from the beginning, making sure they have good parenting attachments and making sure they don't have trauma in their lives.
So I'm thinking, from the perspective of many of our listeners who would be are in the process of divorce and they find themselves in a high conflict divorce, you mentioned the term frequent filers, which I think is brilliant because I found in my high conflict cases that the high conflict personality, through their counsel, usually they use their counsel and they use the legal system as a tool to really abuse the other party, to really just drag that they filed really frivolous motions and filed constantly. These are those cases with the case file that's, you know, six boxes thick. What are there any things that the court system honestly seems to really struggle with what to do about these cases? Is there anything that a person going through the divorce process with a high conflict personality can do to try and just bring it to an end?
Yeah, it's as you ladies know, it's difficult. It's so difficult because it depends where you are, you know, what professionals are in your community. The judges in the community, if in your jurisdiction, if they have training on, you know, this type of high conflict behavior and kind of what to do about it. And we're really at the frontier, the very beginning of starting to understand this and help our courts understand this. And I, you know, overall, I think our courts are trying to do a good job. I really do. They just don't know what to do with some of these folks. And it's just the way our system is set up. So if you're a parent going through this, it can be really one of the most difficult and challenging struggles. So, you know, you ask around and you do your research. If you're looking for an attorney, you find an attorney that has some training in high conflict. And don't just believe if someone puts high conflict on their website that they really understand it. You know, attorneys who are involved in collaborative divorce typically have a mindset of trying to resolve cases instead of litigating cases. So that might be somebody you want to go to. Someone who really focuses on mediation. Someone who's had training in you know, the psychology of high conflict cases and what to do differently. We've at High Conflict Institute, you know, we kind of work on this all the time.
Right.
And think about it all the time. So we've trained, I don't know, maybe 150,000 professionals around the world at this stage on understanding these cases and doing something different. So I'm hoping we've, you know, kind of moved the needle a little bit in that respect, but that, so we hope that filters down to parents who are struggling with this, but we've also developed some programs, one called New Ways for Families, and it's a method of early intervention to help these folks calm their emotions. Like all of us have really, you know, intense emotions at the beginning of a conflict like this or a divorce. And so all of us need to calm our emotions down, but these are folks who have a hard time doing that. They don't know, it's not normal and regular for them. So this program helps them learn to calm their emotions and teaches both parents some new skills for flexible, there's like three main things: flexible thinking, managing your emotions, and having moderate behaviors. So being able to stop yourself before you jump out of that car. It's not a cure and it may not stop that, but it helps give them some skills to, by the end of about 10 to 12 weeks, be able to have heard your children, both parents heard their children, and had both parents teach their children the new skills they're learning. And by the end, be able to settle this either with a mediator or collaborative divorce team. In some cases, we're seeing they're even resolving them on their own. We have a study in Alberta, Canada, that shows that 80% of high conflict litigants that were referred into this program were able to settle this without court assistance. They were able to reach a parent, you know, a divorce agreement, put a parenting plan together, that kind of thing. So those are the, you know, it's not available everywhere, but we do have an online parenting without conflict course that does the same thing. That being said, these are can be some of the most difficult cases, especially if you're with someone who has this fear-based operating system, which if we talk about narcissistic personality, you know, it's this fear of feeling inferior. So they always have to be superior. You're not superior when you're losing, so you're driven to win all the time. So you need a good professional that understands how to handle someone that, who has this absolute desire to win. And instead of fighting with them, learn how to manage them. That's really the key.
So thank you. And we only have a couple more minutes left, so I want to just ask you one final question, and that is, I recently heard a statistic that there are 40 million Americans who are currently co-parenting with an ex-spouse, and the average time for co-parenting is 10 years. And so obviously there's a percentage of those people that are co-parenting with a high conflict personality. Could you give those people maybe just two or three tips on how to communicate with that person, how to interact with that person?
You bet. Great question. So, and I know I go on a lot, so you probably had more questions. We recommend something called BIF communication. BIF means brief, informative, friendly, and firm, because you guys know the communication between these folks is just out of control, and can really trigger us and stuff. And so instead of reacting with a, you know, why, how dare you say this type of email or text response, do it with brief, informative, friendly, and firm. Focus on straight facts and information. Sometimes you don't need to respond. Keep it friendly and cordial. You don't want to trigger their fears. And if you call someone a jerk in the email, it's going to trigger that fear of feeling inferior, yeah. Right? Yeah. If you say, you're never going to see the kids again, it's going to trigger the fear of abandonment in some people. And it just causes all this fighting. So you turn it around with, that's a way to respond in communications. And probably the most important thing is to learn to communicate with what we call EAR, E-A-R, empathy, attention, and respect. The key to it is getting unhooked, because we get hooked into the conflict and we're used to fighting or explaining or freezing. So instead of reacting, you respond with something that's empathetic or something that shows you're giving them attention or respect. Someone with narcissistic personality disorder is they're craving respect. So I'll use the word respect. Hey, I respect what you're trying to do here. I respect the that you got the children back to the mom on time. They crave that. You give it to them, it makes them feel calm. So anything you as the parent can do to make the ex feel calm, the better it's going to go for everybody. And it takes some doing, but a lot of people, once they really get used to it and get unhooked from the emotional piece, they turn it around and it goes so much better.
I just had to write down your little mnemonic devices. I thought they were really great.
Yeah. Well, they're Bill's. Bill was a kindergarten teacher before he was a social worker. And so he's learned about all these mnemonic devices. And at first I thought they were kind of silly. And then as I travel around the world and people say, oh, you work with Bill Eddy, you work with High Conflict Institute. We BIF all the time. We use BIF all the time. So.
I'm one of those people. I have to tell you, I give out the BIF book to clients all the time. I know that's another book that's available, Bill's book, B-I-F-F, BIF, that's available through your Unhooked Media. So it's a wonderful resource. And so is the EAR tip that you gave our listeners. So thank you, Megan. Thank you for being here today, because I think your insights and your tips and this information are so valuable and helpful to people who are really going through a very dark time, as we all know, when they face this high conflict divorce. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank and you. Megan, I know that your books are available on Amazon. Is there anywhere else that people can reach you or reach or order your books or get more information?
Sure. Unhooked Media is my publishing website. High Conflict Institute, there are just hundreds of articles about for parents and for professionals. And all the books are on that website. We do consultations. I'm putting out a book in the spring with a gal in Canada who works with high conflict cases called The Co-Parenting Wellness Planner for High Conflict Cases. So that's coming soon. Anyway, and everything's available digitally, ebooks. So anywhere books are sold, you can find our books.
Thank you again, Megan.
You bet.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us today on Breaking Free, a Modern Divorce podcast. I'm Rebecca Zung.
And I'm Susan Guthrie. For a limited time, get your free copy of Rebecca's best-selling divorce book, Breaking Free, a step-by-step divorce guide to achieving emotional, physical, and spiritual freedom at www.breakingfreethebook.com.
And for your free copy of Susan's Top 10 Reasons to Mediate Your Divorce, visit www.divorceinabetterway.com.
Check back next Monday for our next edition of our powerful, inspirational, and educational podcast. And if you enjoyed today's podcast, please remember to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes and let us know what you liked in a review.
And remember, you're just one step away from your new life.